Your Humanities Half Hour is brought to you by the Northern Marianas Humanities Council.
Hafidays and Piro, welcome to Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry. Our guest today is a longtime visitor to the Northern Marianas, no stranger. He's also a historian supervising in the history of the Marianas, Micronesia, and the Philippines. It's my pleasure to welcome to our show today Mr. Carlos Madrid. Carlos, welcome.
Hafiday, thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Thanks for taking time to chat with us during your one-day visit to Saipan. You're currently a professor and researcher at Micronesian Area Research Center. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege for me as well. Working there is something that I've been looking forward for the longest time, and it's a great opportunity.
Well, as I've mentioned, you're no stranger to many of us here in the Northern Marianas, particularly those involved in historic preservation. Tell us a little bit about what has prompted you or brought you to the Northern Marianas in the past.
Well, initially it was visiting Saipan and being able to work as a volunteer at the Museum of History and Culture at the old Japanese hospital, when I had the chance to meet wonderful people, and with some of them I'm still in contact every time I can, with Genevieve Cabrera, for example. There is a wonderful scholar and a good friend. And that's ever since, I think that was like 13 years ago, I've been looking forward for compiling pieces of history, folklore, and, well, let's be honest, also enjoying the island itself, which I have always enjoyed.
You have a book that's actually available at the Humanities Council, Beyond Distances, the 1980s in the Marianas. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, the Beyond Distances is about the 1870s in the Marianas, the second half of the 19th century. And as I tell my students back in the university, that period is of particular relevance for the history of the Marianas. We could mention different reasons why would we have to emphasize that. But one of those reasons, for example, is that the Northern Marianas were repopulated again by Chamorros from Guam. So in the first half of the 19th century, that is in the 1800s, that first half is relevant because Carolinians settled in Saipan, and that's very relevant. The second half of the 1800s, of the 19th century, is very relevant because for the first time since the conquest, since the dramatic period of the conquest and the reduction, the forced resettlement of the people in Guam, Chamorros have not returned to Saipan as settlers. So it's like a process, a cycle that is closing, that it was closing back in the, I think we'll have to say the 1860s, the 1870s, when those first five Chamorro families from Magaña came here and settled.
Only five?
The first one, yes. If I'm sure many people have heard about this, and their names are known. I don't remember them right now, but yeah, the first five Chamorro families that came back. And at the same time that they were Chamorro, they were not the same Chamorros of the 1600s. They're Chamorros of 230 years later.
Right.
Let me correct one thing, because, you know, my spirit of historian is bothering me because of this. When I said that it was the first time since the Chamorros were transferred during the Spanish conquest, the Chamorros stayed in Saipan after the conquest. There was a village and a church until the 1730s. That would be like 30 years after the end of the war. But there were some epidemics, and the population declined, and eventually there is a moment in which the authorities decided to transfer the people, the remaining survivors, from Saipan to Guam. Maybe that's something about the transferring of people that we can talk later on, but refer to Rota.
Okay, well, the name of your book, again, is Beyond Distances. If anybody is interested in learning more about the 1870s in the Marianas and what transpired during that time here, as you alluded to, you're currently working on something of a oral history project related to something that happened in Rota a long time ago. Tell us about that.
Yes, precisely in the 1870s as well. And I think we spoke about it last time.
Yes, last time you were on the show, you kind of mentioned this.
There was this incident that I only found scattered references in the records of the Spanish colonial government. And is that apparently, let me summarize it very briefly, there was an instance in which the leaders of Rota requested the governor of Guam to be transferred to Umatac because there has been a big typhoon, supposedly, that has damaged Songsong village, and everyone was... They preferred to be transferred to Umatac. Then the governor of Guam sent that request to Manila, because in those days, you know, the Philippines was the Spanish colony, Marianas as well, but the main authority above the governor of the Marianas was the captain general of the Philippines. So the governor of Guam sent a request to Manila. The request of transferring was approved. Then the governor sent the approval to Rota. They said, well, in 2 months, be ready for transferring, because we will send a ship to take you down to Umatac. Well, until that point, everything was more or less supposedly okay and following a natural path. But turns out that seven men from Rota signed a document, a letter addressed to Father Palomo, a Chamorro priest, the first Chamorro priest, asking him to mediate and to stop such transferring. Because, you know, it turns out that they never requested, that they preferred to stay in Rota. And, you know, when we look at it in retrospect, of course it's natural. We can assume that everyone would prefer to stay in their own island.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very surprising to find, like, well, what did they do? Who was trying to move the people away from Rota, and for what reason?
Yes. What's your hypothesis on that?
Well, it's tricky. The governor himself, it seems he didn't know. So he ordered an investigation. Like, what happened? Who wrote the request in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
On behalf of whom?
Mm-hmm.
Et cetera, et cetera. Well, there is some, I think for that, I refer to my book because it's like a long story and that I cannot make it short. But at the end of the day, we don't really know what happened. We just know that the transferring never took place. And, you know, during the process of the interrogation, those 7 men that really stood up and represented the community, you know, they make some emphatic comments. That, for example, one of them said, like, I'm moving away from Rota, there's something that we never requested, and I could not conceive such a nonsense, which is very a very strong statement in
mm-hmm.
those days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm working on matching it with a piece of oral history that is my understanding that it's common knowledge in Rota, and the Manamco used to tell it, and probably up to now many people remember it. The story goes that during the Spanish times, and the story of course is very generic, no, it doesn't go very much into details.
Right.
There was one time that the Spanish wanted to move all the Chamorros of Rota to Guam, and they sent a ship for that. In one version of the story, this event takes place during the period of the conquest. Other versions of the story do not refer when did it happen. The Spanish sent a ship, and they were getting ready to board everyone. The people of Rota didn't want to be transferred. So the officer on board, the Spanish officer, to convince the people and to force them to embark, he tied the figurine of San Francisco de Borja in the ship. Either he put it on, according to one version of the legend, on top of the mast. According to other version of the legend, the story, He tied it on the bow of the ship. And all the Rotanese were praying to San Francisco de Borja to intervene, to mediate, to stop the transferring. Nobody wanted to move. And well, guess what? According to the story, that night, the mast went through the... How do you call that? Of the ship?
The hull
of the ship. And the ship sank. Miraculously, that's how the transferring was stopped. according to other version of the story, the chamorros were repeating a litany that, in fact, if someone of, you know, any member of the audience remember, any member of your audience remembers this sentence or remembers this story and they want to contact you or at the email address that you're going to give later on, I'll be more than happy to listen to that. That part of the story goes that they were praying a particular sentence, they were praying and praying, and the ship sank, the Spanish soldiers drowned, and the only two chamorros that were on board survived. Well, of course, there's no way to check if this episode that is told on the oral tradition of Rota is related to the story that I was investigating or not. I'm assuming, just for the sake of the argument, let's assume that it refers to the same episode. Because imagine, if it's referring to the period of the conquest, will the Rotanese already be so Christian that we will be appealing to San Francisco to prevent the transferring, when the transferring in the first place was supposed to take place for the Christianization?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm more willing to believe, of course we have to leave it in we are only hypothesizing.
Yes.
So I'm willing to explore the idea that it refers to the 1870s, to the same period that I'm researching. And you know what? It turns out that, and I didn't notice when I wrote the book, when that transferring was supposed to take place, according to the documents, a ship, a steamer, with the governor on board, passed by Rota, and the official documents said that it stayed, there was no wind, and it stayed in between Guam and Saipan for 2 days. It doesn't say that it went to Rota. But when the ship arrived to Tinian, is that the ship sunk. It hit the shoal, the reef, and sank. And many people died, including two chamorros that were on board of the ship. So, if we match the two stories, we find, yes, there is a ship sinking. Shortly when the transferring is about to take place, there was a transferring that was about to take place, and well, according, if we follow the documents, we don't know who was behind it. If we follow the oral story, according to one of the versions, is that the Spanish wanted to transfer the people of Rota to Guam so they could turn Rota into a huge pasture land and have cattle. Well, I'm still working on it, trying to compile data, and if there is somebody that remembers, or they have heard the story and they have a different version, or they want just to share their thoughts on this, I will be very happy if they can either write to the email address or let us know one way or another.
You mentioned that there are several versions of this oral history story. How did you come across these versions?
One of those was published in the Marianas Variety by Anthony Calvo in, if I'm not mistaken, 2006 or 2009. I don't remember right now. And I wrote the Marianas Variety if they could check about what day in particular, but I don't think they were able to find it. It was on September. And they published that version, the patron saint of Rota. And in that version, I think the author associates the story with the period of the conquest. The other version that I have heard is through a student of the University of Guam, a very bright young guy by the name Ray Barcinas, who have heard the story from his grandfather or his grandmother, and he shared it with me not so long ago. So those are the two versions that I know so far.
So basically, you would like to know if there's anybody out there who has also heard or knows of something related to this story, and as you've related it. And if you do know, Carlos would be very interested to hear from you, and they can contact either you directly or the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. I'll give that contact information now as well as later again in the program. So if you have any family knowledge or remember hearing a story or know a story related to this incident that happened in Rota, regarding the relocation of the people, you can contact the Northern Marianas Humanities Council at northernmarianashumanities.org. That's northernmarianashumanities.org. Or you can contact Carlos directly at cmadridab@hotmail.com. cmadridab ab@hotmail.com. Well, that's not the only thing you're researching, I understand. And let's take a break, and when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about the Chamorro Folklore Project you're working on.
Perfect.
We'll be back after this break.
Happy holidays from the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. We want to say thank you for being our partner in 2013 through your participation in and support of our many outreach programs, including this radio show. We look forward to what 2014 has in store. Jesus Maasi of Hili Sol for navigating the human experience with us and for making our council your council. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you all.
Welcome back to Your Humanities Half Hour. We're speaking today with Carlos Madrid, a professor at the University of Guam and researcher at Micronesian Area Research Center. Carlos, another thing that you're working on is doing some research on Chamorro folklore. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, that's one thing that I remember from the early 2000s when I was coming here still as a student. And I remember the Manamco of those days, that they were fond of remembering stories that they heard from their parents or their grandparents, and they have to do with three points that I wonder if we can appeal to our audience and see if they can talk now that the Christmas is so near and families getting together, if they can take the opportunity and talk to their Manamco, or if the Manamco themselves are listening, like make an effort in memory and try to remember this pieces of folklore that I'm going to refer.
Yes.
One of them was the Adivina Adivina. That is, I don't even know how to translate it in English, but it's like guess, guess. And usually Adivina Adivina was when the adult will hide something in the hands, and then the children will have to guess in which hand does he have something, or Adivina this, or guess what is this, or guess who. Like, it could also be like a inverse, something like they have to guess what are they referring to.
Okay, so it's like a guessing game.
Yes, exactly.
Adivina, Adivina.
Adivina, Adivina.
Okay. You know, when you said that initially, it seemed to stir a memory in my mind, maybe from my childhood, maybe we played some game like that, but basically if anybody has any recollection of this, you're interested in talking to them about it.
Yes, indeed. And I remember the mother of a good friend of mine, the mother of Annie Leon Guerrero, who used to, she remembered some of those. And also another piece of folklore that I would like to put on the table, that is on the Juan Malas, the stories of Juan Malas or Juan Malemanga. There are different versions of the name, or sometimes it's like three different characters, Pedro Malo, Juan de Malas. In Rota is Juan de Malas, and it's like this young, of course many people have heard about Juan de Malas, and there's some specific stories that I'm very interested in compiling, because it tells us a lot on how the people of those days, the 1800s, relate to the authority, to the things they didn't like. And well, Juan de Malas is this young Chamorro that is with his carabao and he's always playing tricks with the authorities, with the priest, with the governor. Some of them are hilarious, and I'm sure many people remember some of those. And if they could, you know, reproduce it in the same terms that they hear from their Manamco, that would be the best.
What are some of the stories of Juan de Malo, de Malas, also known as Pedro Malo, also known as Juan Malmanga? Give us a couple of stories about this character.
Well, for example, the ones that I remember hearing from the Manamco in Saipan, one of them was like, well, Juan Malas or Juan de Malas was one day in the road, and then he had his hat in the road, and then in the ground, and then the priest was passing by and says, "Oh, Juan, what are you doing there? What's your hat doing there?" And he told the priest, "I have a bird. I trapped a bird, and I cannot take it. And I'm going to leave it there, and I'm going to be back if you can take care of it." So the priest stayed there next to the hat.
I'm laughing already.
You can guess it.
No, I can't, but it just sounds funny. Go ahead.
Well, it turns out that Juan Malas had actually covered the dropping of an animal that had just passed by. And when the priest, tired of waiting there, he just, thinking that it was a bird, he raised the hat a little bit and fast put his hand just to take the bird, and that's how the story finished. And we don't need to know more.
Hi-ya-day. Okay. You know, there was a cartoon for a long time in Pacific Daily News. I don't know if they still run it, Juan Malamanga, right?
I think I still see it every now and then, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, like those stories of the past, those will be the most interesting as well.
So, again, if anybody has any stories about this character, Pedro Malo, Juan Malamanga, or Juan de Malas, did I say that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Carlos would be interested in hearing from you and documenting those stories. Are you sure you don't have another story from about this character? He's pretty funny. What was his role, really, as a character in folklore?
Well, he's the character that is always... he represents the poking fun at the mainstream, at the authority, at those that are representing power, formality, and he's the one that is wiser than them, that plays tricks on them. He is wiser than the governor. And there was one story about the governor having three piglets and Juan Malas getting the three of them. And another version of the story is that the governor has three daughters. There are different versions sometimes of each story. And I'm sure we must have some members of the audience that they remember hearing from their grandparents, or that they, Manam, could remember those stories from their grandparents. That would be great to hear from them.
I have a question. Out of all of the things that you could possibly study about Chamorro history, or oral history, what prompts you to choose a particular topic? For example, Pedro Malo. Why are you interested in him?
Well, the thing is, there are some of the things that we can gather. Part of the past, we have to reconstruct it from different sources. Sometimes we have the archaeology that gives us, you know, this is like CAS. You reconstruct, you use clues, and you reconstruct what really happened. Sometimes when there's no archaeology, and besides archaeology, we use simultaneously records of the colonial times, or diaries of private individuals, or logbooks of ships that are passing by, sources, newspapers, etc. But we have to keep in mind that those sources are going to be limited. Like the archaeology, what archaeology can find for us is not necessarily what existed, but only what survived of the past. The same thing with the documents. The records are only going to be talking about what administration, as far as administration is concerned, trials, reports, memories. Occasionally there are private letters. I'm now working with a pack of private letters written sometimes from Tinian to Guam, from Guam to Manila. Most interesting. But other times there are things that are not in the documents. They're not in the archaeological stratum. So we have to explore oral traditions that are most interesting. And they have their own mechanics to understand. Like sometimes it changes over one generation to another. Sometimes it's kept the same way through generations. And they're always usually concerned with details of life or, you know, forms of entertainment that naturally are not recorded in other forms, because in those days, remember, there was no radio, there was almost no printing facilities. So those pieces of surviving folklore or oral traditions can give us hints on how did the people relate to themselves, to one another, to the environment, to the authorities, etc., etc. That's why I find it particularly interesting, and I'm making an effort to either join those who are already working on it. You must have heard of Liz Rehebe.
Yes.
I always mispronounce it, and I'm terrible on that. And she's working on with other group, compiling the refrains, the sayings in Chamorro, and some of those are also in Spanish, that the people used to say. And those are pieces of knowledge said by Chamorros, for Chamorros, in Chamorro, also using in Spanish. As you know, back then, most of the people spoke or understood Spanish one way or another. So those pieces of knowledge are very relevant, and they tell us a lot. And there are no other record of those. By the way, now that we are talking about this, if I can mention the other piece of folklore that I would like to make a call for the audience to explore, to see if they can compile some traces of it. It refers to the stories that started with the sentence Estera Sirai. Estera Sirai, and then the story follows. It's like an introductory sentence that opens the narrative of a story. And it's those stories that I'm interested in Chamorro. I'm sure some people must have heard those. And in fact, I recorded years ago the Manamco telling some of those. And if I'm not mistaken, Larry Cabrera, the father of Genevieve Cabrera, he remembered many. And well, there may be more, and perhaps some people can take the time and write us and let us know, because those are, as we were saying, pieces of knowledge that are not recorded elsewhere.
The stories that begin with this line, if you could say it again.
Estera Sirai.
Are they particular type of story, or do they tend to vary? Is there a theme that goes with these stories?
Usually like stories of legends of a prince and a princess, or sometimes there's just any kind of story that the person is going to make or is going to retell. And for some people, it was a way of saying that it was true, that what they're going to say, it was true. The other times I have heard it as those, you know, just narratives or fairy tales of a prince and a princess. And well, maybe they were, all of them were existing at the same time. Maybe, I don't know. And it's more or less that I'm asking for help from people that may know about it. And I'm not only not ashamed of asking for help, but it's like I know it's indispensable for the work that the service that we are trying to provide. Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with these stories once they're collected? And will they be made available to the people who contribute?
Well, we are trying to... What do you mean they will be available for the people?
Well, will they be published or...
Well, depends on what comes up and how successful are we in gathering those. For my purposes, I'm trying to close... reference those stories with the records or the pictures that we get through the records and the archaeology and the newspapers. We using those sources, we come up with a picture of the past, but then we need to cross it with those pieces of folklore that tell us about the daily life of the people, their concerns, their worries, their priorities, and give a more, you know, history cannot be the narrative about the authorities, the governments, the kings, the businessmen. No, it's also the life of the people, that it was anonymous, that they had no power, that they were doing their own life, experiencing their own victories, defeats, hopes, sorrows. And we have to at least try to come up with an idea on how was their daily life. And where was their forms of entertainment, and give them voice, because some of those stories will allow us to literally give them voice.
Again, we're speaking today with Carlos Madrid, professor at the University of Guam and researcher at the Micronesian Area Research Center. If you would like to contribute to his research on this Chamorro folklore or the oral any oral history you may have on this incident in Rota that happened in the 1800s, you may contact the Northern Marianas Humanities Council at northernmarianashumanities.org, and we'll put you in touch with him. Or you can contact Carlos directly at C Madrid, that's CMADRID, and then the letters AB@hotmail.com. CMADRIDAB@hotmail.com. Carlos, any final words before we go today?
Well, only to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here. I'm thrilled to be in Saipan once again, and I'm hoping that we will get a lot of responses now that the Christmas is so near. And by the way, Merry Christmas.
Thank you, you too, and Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. This has been Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry.
This program was supported by a We the People grant awarded to the Northern Marianas Humanities Council from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities or the Northern Marianas Humanities Council.